This is Rosen Institute's Your Law Firm, where Lee Rosen and Ned Days cover management, marketing, finance, and new technologies for building the practice you deserve. Here's Lee Rosen.
It's good to be with you today from Abu Simbel, Egypt. We're on a quick tour down here. We flew out of the Maldives and down through Cairo just for a night in Cairo and caught an early flight this morning down to Abu Simbel to see the temple. And we're leaving early tomorrow for Aswan for a couple of days before catching a short Nile cruise up to Luxor. For us this week, it's all ruins all the time here on the Nile. And I'll tell you, there's a little bit of whiplash to go from the beautiful islands and the Maldives all the way down here to the desert. But it's all good. My feet are getting kind of tired from all the walking, but we're having a great time in Egypt.
It's time for your tech tip. I am a bit of a softie, a bleeding heart. I do not want to upset people, and I really want nothing more than for everybody to just like me. So firing employees was my least favorite part of the job. Even the ones I didn't like, I still really felt bad about it. My first fire was rough. I had to wake up early in the morning to drive about 2.5 hours to our Charlotte office. I decided that on my way, the smart thing to do to calm my nerves was to stop in for 2 Egg McMuffins, which meant I was tired, nervous, and borderline incontinent for the whole process. We once had an employee who, on top of not being particularly effective, had a bad habit of just not showing up to work. And as luck would have it, she didn't show up on the day I planned to fire her, so I had to do it over the phone. I had to fire an absolutely wonderful employee after another employee saw a TV show about how she had spent a little time in prison for robbing a bank and shooting her husband point blank in the chest. They were all emotional. I never wanted to do it. I always hesitated. There were often tears shed. What I didn't have any hesitation about was locking those people out of our systems ASAP. I didn't want those lunatic people who weren't a great fit flying off the handle and wreaking havoc. And to be fair, I can't think of a single instance of that ever happening. Most people aren't that malicious and just want to move on, the ones we hired anyway. But chances are, at some point, an employee will leave, voluntarily or otherwise, and having a process in place for handling all the accounts and credentials makes sure that you aren't leaving a bunch of loose ends that can come back to bite you later. Even when people leave on good terms and nothing goes wrong, I have more than once felt that shiver run down my spine when I realize there is still an admin account active for an employee or contractor who has been gone for 2 years. So what kind of process should you be putting in place to make sure that a team member's departure goes smoothly as far as the technology is concerned? The first and most obvious priority is removing access to files, accounts, and communications. If you are using Office 365 or Google Workspace, locking or limiting access to an account is fairly straightforward for all of the services involved. But there are no doubt lots of other websites and pieces of software the employee has had access to that you now need to remove or restrict. Most services we're using, like document storage platforms, case management systems, and project tracking software, let us create individual user accounts for every employee. And this is a good place to mention that if you don't have administrative access and rely on an employee who may one day quit or you may one day fire to handle this kind of thing, getting those steps documented ASAP is a good idea. Individual accounts aren't always possible or practical with all software, and in those circumstances, a password or passkey manager like 1Password should always be used. This lets you share account credentials with as many people as you need and limit or remove their access when necessary without ever actually giving them the password. If you aren't using a password manager already, do that now, today, for things like social media accounts that might be easier to manage by letting everyone use the same credentials. The next step is to document or ideally automate the employee removal process for these digital assets. There should be a list of accounts to close and hardware or other physical items to collect for every team member. You know I can't go more than a couple of weeks without mentioning a workflow tool like Zapier, and whenever possible, creating an automation that you can kick off when an employee departs to suspend accounts, send out form emails, update a personnel spreadsheet, and whatever else needs to happen will pay dividends in peace of mind when the next termination rolls around. A lot of HR and payroll providers are starting to get with the times and provide API access so that you can incorporate actions inside those platforms within your automations. I just checked Gusto's website, since that's what we use, and they let you kick off events based on all kinds of things that happen, including an employee being terminated. Start simple, but be aware that whether you just have a written system or decide to go all in on automating it, you are going to want different processes or some kind of branching workflow that accounts for the various terminations you are likely to have. Sometimes you fire a person and immediately need everything closed out. Sometimes they give notice, either weeks or months, so their access to individual pieces might be phased out over time. And sometimes if they are taking cases with them or some kind of other circumstance comes up, you need to close out access for some software but leave others open. Even if you are handling it all manually with a spreadsheet, having a list of what is still active for which employees makes it a lot easier to avoid realizing months or years in the future that you have left access open to an employee who should no longer have it. And lastly, what do we do about hardware? Hardware can be a tricky one if you are furnishing computers and printers and phones to your employees, and can get even messier if they have things like leased phone equipment or payment processing machinery that you don't technically own. Thankfully, these days, it's a lot less common for that kind of thing to be necessary, and I'd let the ease of retrieval or necessity of retrieval figure into your decisions about the kind of communications, payment, and other hardware you decide to use. We migrated toward a system at the firm where we were mostly just giving employees a technology stipend each month and requiring them to purchase their own computers and accessories. That meant the devices were theirs and we didn't have to bother collecting them. But there were long stretches where we furnished the hardware and collected it from employees who left or were forced to leave. Not too difficult when it was a desktop sitting in the office, a little harder when it was a laptop or printer in the ex-employee's house. If you are in a situation where this is an issue, where you are providing hardware and expect to get it back on termination, I would ask you to consider how much trouble you are willing to go through for a used ThinkPad or whatever it is you are providing. I realize that in some circumstances there are things more important than a computer that need to be returned, and in most circumstances, even messy ones, we didn't have a lot of drama over getting physical assets back to us. When it comes to commodity hardware, though, if it's going to be an issue, I think you're usually better off letting go of that 18-month-old notebook that's just going to sit in a closet once you have it back, rather than agonizing over it. I'm Ned Days, and that's your Tech Tip.
And now for your moment of concise advice. Should you tell your secrets to your team members? That's a question that comes up as law firms grow. As you add new team members, especially in a management role, do you let them come behind the scenes to where the money is kept? Should you let them know how you're doing financially? Our financial secrets, they are probably the easiest secrets that we can keep when it comes to running a law firm. We can keep our books private if that's what we want to do. The rest of what goes on in the law firm is pretty hard to keep quiet. Most folks in the firm know which employees are performing and which ones aren't. That's not much of a secret. In fact, they usually know more than you do, and they probably know it before you know it. They know a lot of things. They know what's up with incoming new client inquiries. They have a sense of how that's going. They have a general sense of what the firm is planning, whether you tell them or not. They know which clients are paying their bills, and they have a pretty good sense of the place that your business holds in the marketplace. They know things, but it's tough for them to figure out the details of the law firm's finances. They have only vague ideas about how the firm is doing and how much money you're taking out of the law firm and how much cash you have on hand. So as long as you keep meeting the payroll, well, they figure things are okay. And a lot of law firm owners, they choose not to share much of any information with the team. Now, different lawyers view that sort of thing differently. Some choose to be very open with information and others choose to be very private. We each have our own views on this topic. We each approach this differently. But when we bring on a team member who's expected to make decisions for the business, someone like a managing lawyer who is supervising lawyer revenues, or a firm administrator who's managing the firm's finances, or a marketing director who's responsible for revenues, who has targets to meet, and who has to manage marketing expenses, well, you've got to decide whether to let them go behind the scenes. Do you let them have access to your accounting information? Should they know what you're paying folks, what you're spending on the law firm's expenses? And they will quickly be able to figure out how much money is left over for you. Do you, as they often put it, do you open the kimono? Do you tell people what's really going on? And if you do, well, then how far do you go? Do you give them access to your timekeeping and billing system? What about your general ledger software like QuickBooks? How about the payroll system or even the tax returns? How far do you go? The decision about opening up the books, about opening the kimono to some or all of your team members, well, it's a button pusher. It pushes our emotional buttons. Some of us, we worry about making too much money and how that will impact the team when they discover that we're putting big bucks in our brokerage account. Many of us worry that we'll undermine team confidence if the team members discover that we're not making nearly as much as they had thought or hoped we were. And we may not want those folks to know about our big home mortgage or the car loan that we're maintaining or the outstanding balance on the law firm's American Express card. Each of us, we all react to this differently. We each get triggered in our own way when the topic of opening up the kimono comes up. We each have our own perspective and our own financial concerns. But this topic, it comes up a lot. There are even management gurus who speak exclusively on this topic, on the topic of open book management. Some of those experts, they advocate for letting everyone in on everything. They take the position that it's hard to do your job in a business if you don't understand the finances of the business. And I think that makes a certain amount of sense. And I've played with these concepts. And too often, sadly, what I have found is that my team members, well, they weren't all that interested in our law firm finances. We opened up the kimono at times and nobody looked to see what we were showing off. That was a little distressing. I was all worried and nervous about how they'd react to the information, only to discover that they couldn't be bothered to digest the information. I opened up the books for a while, only to discover that nobody wanted to read the books. That all made me a little sad. But today, I don't want to get bogged down in the need for everyone to know. I don't want to spend time on this concept of open book management. I want us to focus on the need for certain team members to know when they really need to know in order to do their jobs. For those of us hiring our first members of what will turn into our larger management team, well, making a shift towards sharing financial information, it can be a struggle. We simply aren't sure what to do, how much to share, and who to share it with, but it's all pretty simple and straightforward once you spend a few minutes and think it through. If they can't do their jobs without knowing, well then, we're going to have to make an adjustment to a bit of our laundry, some of it clean and some of it dirty, hanging out on the line for those folks to see. They've got to see it if they're going to be effective. The fact is, we already reveal many of our secrets. We don't keep secrets from our accountant or our bookkeeper. The same needs to be true for the managers that we hire. We can't afford to keep secrets from our managing lawyer or our marketing director or our firm administrator if we expect them to deliver results. They need to know if they're going to get the job done. They need to be in the loop to know the numbers. They need to be able to use that information to do their jobs. You've got to open the kimono. So then, should you wall off parts or pieces of that information? Should you open certain doors but keep other doors locked? I don't think you should. I think if you're going to open the kimono, well, go ahead and open the kimono. The reality is that once you share some information, you are effectively sharing it all. It doesn't take much data for someone who is good at their job to figure out everything else. This becomes an algebra problem, and if they aren't sharp enough to figure out what you're taking out of the law firm, then they probably aren't smart enough to do the job that you've hired them to do. I'm suggesting that you go ahead and, at least for those folks who need the information, you open your kimono wide, sharing information. It really is no big deal to those of us who have hired management team members in the past. You get used to it very quickly, but in the beginning, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, and it's a little bit difficult. Our private information, it was once private, and as you grow, well, that's just not the case anymore. You're going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to adjust if you plan to grow your law firm. So now, as you hire that first member of the management team, well, this is the time to make that adjustment. Put on your kimono and get ready to open it up. That's your moment of concise advice. Wrapping up from Abu Simbel, thanks for spending a few minutes with me and Ned today. We hope you have a great weekend and an even better week next week. Keep plugging away, moving forward, getting things done. You're on the right track. You'll get there. I promise. We're all in this together, and together we build better practices through better marketing, better management, and better technology. Until next time, I'm Lee Rosen.
Thanks for listening to Your Law Firm. Visit rosensrules.com for our free course on the 10 critical rules successful law firms follow.